Ryan McGee. You know, every week during the college football season, you track the worst teams in the nation. We call it the bottom 10, and I, for one, am an avid reader. So, you know, I was excitedly looking forward to who you would have in the so-called coveted fifth spot of your final rankings of the season. And true to form, I see it is the Ohio State Buckeyes.
The coveted fifth spot is not the fifth worst team in the country. It's a good team that had a bad week. And if you're Ohio State, you really only need to win one game. And they did not take care of business against Michigan.
McCord looks, fires, intercepted! And Michigan will win the game and head to the Big Ten Championship.
Ryan Day's 1-3 against Michigan. And back in the day, not that long ago, the knock on Harbaugh was he beat everyone except Ohio State. I call it the John Cooper rule. John Cooper took Ohio State to Rose Bowls, had Heisman winners, but he couldn't beat Michigan. And so that's how you land in the coveted fifth spot. And their fan base, just like all the fan bases that land in the fifth spot, they have no idea. How can you we ain't the fifth worst team in the country? You SEC homer? I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
If you guys didn't get it by now, it's the fifth spot because, hello, the Power Five conferences. But all I want to know, Ryan, is since your final column of the year came out before the selection committee picked its final playoff field, who do you think deserves that fifth spot right now?
We all agree Florida State has a really, really great case to be in the college football playoff. Most would argue that they should be in the college football playoff. But there's also a point where you stop telling everyone that you should be in the college football playoff because it's time to get ready for your bowl game. That's probably where they would land simply because I went to my neighborhood Christmas party last Saturday night and got cornered by the one guy in my neighborhood who went to Florida State. So that alone is enough to land you in the coveted fifth spot.
Many of college football's greatest oddities and most tortured fans typically sit towards the bottom of the rankings. But it is out of those ashes that tomorrow's charming Cinderella stories are born. So today, with the regular season officially behind us and bowl season on the horizon, our expert on the sport's most challenged programs, Ryan McGee, helps us review the 2023 season from a bottom-up perspective. And looks back on some big programs who, for at least 1 week, may have felt like the bottom dwellers themselves. I'm Clinton Yates, kiddos. It's Thursday, December 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. McGee, college football bowl season officially kicks off this weekend. Last year at this time, you gave us a salute to all the oddball bowl games out there. We will link to that in today's episode description, but it was a fun one, of course. But today, we're going to look back on the college football season through a different lens. So orient us here. How many years have you been writing your bottom 10 column for ESPN?
I believe this was year 11. It might have been year 12. In classic bottom 10 style, we're not very good at math around here. And when I say we, I mean me. And so, yeah, but Mark Schlabaugh handled it for a little bit. Our former editor, David Duffy, handled it for a little bit. But I took it over, and everyone will tell you, especially my wife, I take it entirely too seriously. I don't know how much time those guys spent on it on a weekly basis. Let's just say I spent a lot of time in the darkest corners of the ESPN Plus app on a Saturday afternoon, And my wife is like, are you doing it again? I'm like, yeah. So all you guys out there that have been busted for like looking at something you're not supposed to look at 1 o'clock in the morning, if my wife catches me on the laptop at 1 a.m., it's because I'm watching San Jose State.
Oh, man. Ryan is huge in New Mexico, if you don't know that, for this reason. Where did the idea first come from?
Well, it came from legendary West Coast writer Steve Harvey. Wrote for the LA Times, wrote for multiple people, still blogs. And Steve, who I've never met, but his was simple, and it was syndicated. So even growing up in the Carolinas, I used to see the bottom 10. Like, you remember in the newspaper, you had the one page that had all the box scores, right? It's got like the high school cross-country scores, and it's got like, you know, the betting lines before anyone really officially cared about that, and all these weird things. And then over in the corner would be the bottom 10. And so that's where it started. And again, it was just a simple list. And, you know, typical me, I took it and made it entirely too complicated, but it is what it is.
By the way, it's worth noting the bottom 10 might be the only ESPN.com column with a Wikipedia page, which is high regards in this household. But despite it being, you know, very tongue-in-cheek, the tone, is there any actual system? I mean, I know you said you're not good at math, but there has to be some level of consistency. How do you go about putting this together on any given Saturday?
All right, so first of all, you kind of, it's just like, you know, it's just like that hoity-toity, you know, top 10, right? You have your preseason poll. And so leading into the year, you've done your research. And then once the game starts, it starts taking care of itself. But the bottom 10 is so erratic. So like New Mexico State, beginning of this year, New Mexico State, the other Aggies, as I call them, they have consistently been in the bottom 10 ever since I took this thing over a decade ago. And they started the year off with a couple losses. Like, all right, here we go. And then they basically didn't lose again the rest of the year.
Pavia to the corner of the end zone. Caught. Touchdown, New Mexico State. Eli Stowers with the reception. And New Mexico State can start celebrating now. An outstanding victory, but a tough loss for Auburn. New Mexico State wins it 31-10.
The best part of the bottom 10 is when you just send them away. Maybe they'll come back to you one day. Maybe not. But you send them out the door and pat them on the back and say, all right, we've prepared you for the real world. But the point of all that is that the system is primarily you go through the conference standings page on ESPN.com. You see where everyone is, and then you see how bad those losses were. And then you just, quite frankly, sometimes they'll make the cut for entertainment value. And some of them won't because they're boring. And that's, you know, it's nuanced. And Captain Morgan whispers to me a lot, you should do this and you should do that, you know, at 1 a.m. on a Monday night.
So let's go over some of these names because they are very funny. An obvious one, UMass, referring to UMass Amherst. Temple of Doom, obviously referring to Temple University, alma mater of my sister, actually. Acrimonious, which makes me laugh because I went to Miami of Ohio, who showed up at the bottom 10 a couple times.
Miami of Ohio.
Mid-American,
right? Just like
conference.
You could order down at the Denny's, right?
And Rod Tidwell's alma mater, which is a great reference to a fantastic movie. How much influence does the captain have on those names?
A lot, because I don't think it's probably nearly as funny at 1 a.m. It's not nearly as funny at 1 p.m. the next day as it was when I came up with it at 1 a.m. My all-time favorite, and I'll never forget the moment I thought of this, was UT San Antonio. And UT San Antonio, UTSA, this is one of these programs that, again, they were in the bottom 10 forever. They won the bottom 10 at least once during my tenure. And now, I mean, they should have run the table 2 years ago. And now they're
borderline perennial bowl team these days.
No, every year. And so, but my all-time favorite was ROCK in the UTSA, which was, you know, obviously a John Cougar Mellencamp reference. And, but I kept waiting on his lawyers to reach out. But yeah, ROCK in the UTSA, that was one of the, when I did it, I announced to the house, I just came up with this, and my wife and daughter didn't even look up from their phones, but I thought it was hilarious.
All right, let's get into this year's list. The heart and soul of the column is, of course, the coveted fifth spot, which you explained earlier. And when we went back and looked at the teams who earned that spot throughout this season, you see some of the bigger storylines of the year taking shape. So let's get a little closer into those teams. Let's start with your column after week 7. That week, the fifth spot went to USC, who entered the season as, I mean, a national title contender. Let's be honest. Caleb Williams was at the quarterback position, the presumptive Heisman favorite after having won it the year before. How exactly did the wheels come off in week seven for my Trojans out here?
Yeah, well, so they go to Notre Dame, right, and just get destroyed. Like, it wasn't even, like, they got hit upside the head with the golden shillelagh, or whatever it is that they call it. And my favorite thing to do with Caleb Williams, and I'll say this, so the number one unwritten rule, but most important rule about the bottom 10 is we don't pick on individual players.
Sure.
Right? We'll pick on coaches all day. We'll pick on programs all day. We'll make fun of the uniforms. We'll make fun of a play. But we usually don't call players out. I never used Caleb Williams' name, but I did refer to him quite frequently as the hamburger spokesman. Because I will say this, part of the experience of if you're going to accept, you know, however many millions of dollars a year to do national television commercials, if you're hanging out at the Nissan Heisman house and you're selling Wendy's hamburgers while you're still playing college football, that's change, right? I feel like it gives me a little bit of license, maybe not my name, but if I say the hamburger spokesman, then everyone knows exactly who I'm talking about.
USC went on to lose four of its next five games, finishing 7-5. They ended up firing their defensive coordinator. They could have lost that game at Colorado. How do I know? Because I was there. Do you think that's the fix here, getting a better defensive scheme in place, or are there deeper problems for this Trojans historical program?
Lincoln Riley is the quarterback whisperer. Everyone understands that. I mean, this was the first year he hadn't been to the Heisman finalist ceremony in forever because he didn't have a quarterback there. But the question is, at the end of the day, he's still an air raid coach. And the knock on air raid coaches forever, whether it's Hal Mumme, whether it's the late, great Mike Leach, whether it's Lincoln Riley, you just give me anyone. You know, even at the height of the air raid craze at Oklahoma with Bob Stoops back in the day is, can you play defense? And can you win games not paying a whole lot of attention to playing defense? And so that's the question. And so as long as he adheres to that, Lincoln Riley, then there's going to be problems. So, yeah. But the reality is that they've been exposed a little bit, and everyone has seen that. And, you know, as great as Caleb Williams is, the man could only do so much on his own. And the reality was it just was too much for him to take on by himself.
Fun fact, we talked to Dave Wilson in our episode yesterday about the history of the air raid. So I appreciate you bringing that up, sir.
Dave Wilson, who, by the way, is one of my favorite people on planet Earth, and what a great episode it was. And Dave was not, you're never going to have any problem filling time on this show with Dave. Hey, Dave, where do you get brisket in Texas? That's a four-part episode of ESPN Daily right there.
All right, starting in week 9, we got to a stretch where schools from Oklahoma held the coveted fifth spot for 3 weeks in a row. What exactly happened there, Ryan?
All right, so if you're Oklahoma and you don't take care of business against Kansas, you're going to have the coveted fifth spot.
Kansas with Neal, touchdown! A generational win for Kansas, finally toppling Oklahoma.
It is almost unprecedented that a team is in there 2 weeks in a row. But then, if you follow up your loss to Kansas by losing the last, at least for the foreseeable future, edition of Bedlam against Oklahoma State, then yeah, you're back in there again.
Need a conversion to keep Oklahoma's hopes of a Big 12 title and a national title alive. On fourth down, Gabriel on the run, throwing, Stoops, juggling, caught him, but he's short. Oklahoma State's going to take over on downs and a minute away from winning the final Bedlam.
And then, if you're Oklahoma State and you take care of business in Bedlam and spend all week being paraded around Stillwater as the heroes of the state, and you follow that up with getting just rolled by UCF, a 500 team at best.
Here goes R.J. Harvey, inside the 20, 92 yards.
Oh, my goodness. Big play after big play.
UCF dominant start to finish.
Then, yeah, that's how you end up in the coveted fifth spot, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. And I should have looked to see if maybe, I don't know, There had to have been some Division II or FCS school from Oklahoma that had a bad week the next week. I should have just stuck them in there just to do it.
Well, the irony there, of course, is that UCF themselves had earned the coveted fifth spot earlier
right.
in the season, really
yeah.
rubbing salt in the wound for I'm a man.
Yeah.
Mike Gundy for Okie State. So this was the swan song for this version of the Big 12 Conference as Texas and Oklahoma bolt for the SEC next year. That week six game between them was on the short list for the game of the year. The first 3 minutes were some of the most exciting I'd ever seen in college football. I think we all thought we were heading towards a rematch in the Big 12 title game, but Oklahoma didn't hold up their end of that bargain. Do you think we, as in all of us, college football fans, missed out on an opportunity there? Or was the Big 12 season an appropriate end to said era?
All I cared about in the end, quite frankly, was that I just needed one of the two to get to the Big 12 championship game because Commissioner, still brand new Commissioner, Big 12, Brett Yormark, made his infamous comments speaking to the Texas Tech Booster Club leading into the season about, we need you to take care of business.
And coach, I'm not going to put any pressure on you, but I'm going to be in Austin for Thanksgiving, okay? And you better take care of business like you did right here in Lubbock last year, okay?
And what he was telling the Red Raiders was, we need you to make sure you keep Texas out of the conference championship game. And then when Texas rolled Texas Tech in the season finale to officially clinch their spot in the Big 12 title game, what did they do at DKR in Austin? They ran the video on the giant Texas-sized video screen of Brett Yormark telling Texas Tech they need to take care of business, followed by a big graphic that said, see y'all in Arlington for the Big 12 championship game. Brett's a friend of mine. I've known Brett and I worked together at NASCAR 20 years ago.
Nice.
But that right there, as long as Texas got in simply so that we could have that moment, I really didn't care about the rest of it.
Coming up, we'll take a look at a bottom 10 team who was on the list for reasons kind of, sort of, out of their control. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. McGee, the most curious case I think we saw on your bottom 10 this season was that of James Madison University, a.k.a. J. Matty, if you're from that part of the world, a school in Harrisonburg, Virginia. This is one of those stories that some people may have been a little bit confused by. So could you please explain how the Dukes landed on your list after week 12?
So James Madison was undefeated. They were solidly in the top 25. College game day was on their campus. And all of this because the way that the rules are written by the NCAA, and keep in mind, and I've said this on this podcast 1,000 times, when I say the rules are written by the NCAA, though it's a monolithic, you know, industry, they didn't write that. the membership wrote it. So this rule was written by the people who work in the sport. Like this all, this is a membership-run organization. The NCAA just has to enforce this. So if you're making a transition from being an FCS school, which is what we used to call, you know, 1AA, they left the 1AA FCS level at the end of 2021 and made the jump to FBS, which is the, you know, the bowl group. This is the group that you all know, the big brand box deal. So they make the transition up. Well, as part of the rules, you have to wait 2 years to qualify for the postseason as you make your transition. It's a lot like the old transfer rules, where if you transfer from one school to another, you had to sit out for a year. Right, exactly. And so they basically have to sit out for 2 years. They get to play the games. They contend for whatever, but they just can't play in a postseason game. And they were really angry about that because they were undefeated, and they felt like they should have been higher in the top 25. And there's a lot of schools that we've beaten who are going to be in bowl games, and we don't get to go to a bowl game. And so game day goes to their campus. I wrote this kind of faux political ad thing that we ran on game day, you know, put James Madison in a bowl game and the whole deal. And then what did they do? They lost the game. They lost to their old faux App State that night.
Trying to get to the end zone. Oh, let's see here. Is it a touchdown? It is. App State will win it. App State snaps the Duke's undefeated streak here in 2023.
It's a little embarrassing. It's like if you decided, if you were a singer and you decided you're going to have your own showcase, right? And no one shows up. Or you walk out there and you've lost your voice. Like, you can't, you got to take care of your business. And so that's how James Madison, and I think what we said was James Mad as Son. Like that. That's how they landed, you know, in that coveted fifth spot.
Well, I know how you feel about how they sort of crash landed out of the spotlight, but this program has done quite a few things in their first two seasons in the FBS, no?
No, it's amazing. What they've done is remarkable, and no one should take away from that. But I'll say this too. They knew what the rules were. And, you know, there are a lot of teams in their conference, in the Sun Belt Conference, which is a conference that I love and adore and have for a long time. But there are a lot of teams, App State, Marshall, Georgia Southern, Coastal Carolina, all these schools who made that same transition, and they had to play by those same rules, and they had winning seasons and weren't allowed to play in a bowl game and had to watch other teams. So there was zero sympathy from their opponents because they're all like, they knew the rules coming into it. So I get it. It's frustrating. But again, those rules were written by the membership, and you are a member. And so you have to adhere to the policies.
The Dukes ended up in a bowl game, though, right?
Well, they ended up by default because there weren't enough six-win teams to fill all the bowl spots, which y'all go back and listen to the show we did a year ago. You'll hear how I feel about that. I got no problem with that. But yeah, so James Madison and Jacksonville State, the other Gamecocks, they both ended up in bowl games. But yeah, you can catch James Madison in the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl, December 23rd.
App State very famously taking down Michigan.
Yep.
Which most of you remember for the blocked kick that was one of the all-time college football highlights. Okay. Ryan, who do you think would be in the running for your title of favorite bottom 10 team of all time?
All right. You know, and they're not in the bottom 10 any longer, and this is part of the experience. And I say this all the time, and it's the absolute truth. The greatest part of the bottom 10 experience is when a team has been on the list and then they turn the corner. When a team that I have written about suddenly makes it to a bowl game. You know, when Texas State makes it to a bowl game, when UTSA makes it to double-digit wins, when one of these teams turns around, it is honestly, I feel like I'm a part of the deal. I was the sideline reporter, co-sideline reporter at the Myrtle Beach Bowl a couple years ago, and North Texas was in the game. And those guys, that coaching staff, they were like, we made it. I'm like, you did make it. When Kansas hosted College Game Day a year ago, a guy showed up and stood right behind the desk with a sign that says, hey, Ryan McGee, we enjoyed it, but we're out of the bottom 10. That's the greatest. So I say all that to say this. My all-time favorite bottom 10 team is Georgia State. Or as I refer to them, Georgia State, not Southern. Because everyone wants to call Georgia Southern Georgia State, and no one called Georgia State Georgia Southern. They even have the same acronym, so it's a little confusing. But my first ever bottom 10 champions a dozen years ago, it was Georgia State. And a few years later, they made it to a bowl game. And now they bowl about every other year. But the athletic department sent me a care package. And they had a shirt made that said Georgia State, not Southern. And they sent it to me. And so they will always be, because they were my first. You know, you're not supposed to pick your favorite child, but they were my first born. And so Georgia State will always be my favorite bottom 10 team, even though they're never in the bottom 10 anymore.
All right, we have to end on this, because when I look back at all the bottom 10 columns you wrote this season, Ryan, the one that caught my eye was after week two. Is there anything you might want to take back there, Mr. McGee?
Yeah, so Florida State fans are going to enjoy this one. I had Alabama in there after week two, and this is how bad Alabama looked in that Texas game in week two, which quite frankly I think is why Texas is in the college football playoff. And they landed in the Dakota fifth spot. Alabama had never been in there. Ohio State had been in there. Clemson had been in there. Georgia had been in there. Michigan had been in there. But Alabama had avoided it. But the reality was they got pushed around. I fly into the Birmingham airport about 12 times a year. In fact, I will later this week. And all the way back from week two, I swear that guy, the gate agent there at the Birmingham Shuttlesworth Airport, just waits on me to remind me that I had Alabama in the bottom 10 week two.
Well, I appreciate it, Ryan. The bottom 10 is one of the greatest things that we do at this network, no doubt about it. And I just want to let everybody know, if you haven't seen the great Heisman race of 1997, there's a 1 second clip of young Ryan McGee in the press conference where Peyton Manning is announcing that he's going to stay at Tennessee. I caught this with my own naked eye, Ryan, and I sent it to you, and it was actually you.
It was me. It was many years and many pounds ago, but there I was. There's other video of me too, like behind the scenes, but I don't share it a lot. It's like seeing Bigfoot.
Thank you, Ryan.
You're the man, Clinton.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.